Today's special episode is brought to you by Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions. Begin pre-event learning with our best-selling Operationally Curious Conversation Starters. Download the app at startingpoints.app or the App Store, and purchase card decks at www.startingpointcards.com.
For today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, I want to jump into some stuff around learning teams, something that's near and dear to my heart, and probably near and dear to your heart, too, if you've been playing with them. If not, this is a great episode for those that have been doing and not doing alike. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. My name is Sam Goodman. If this is your first time here, welcome to the circus. No, happy to have you. Whether you're brand new or you've been here since the very first episode, thank you. Thank you for being here. Today, I want to jump into some stuff around learning teams. But before we get there, do me a favor, head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com. Follow along on all things social media. LinkedIn's a good one. You can follow the Hop Nerd LLC. I post a bunch of stuff to my personal professional profile. So that's just under Sam Goodman. You'll see this ugly mug. Make sure you follow one on YouTube. We've been doing a lot. I have been doing small business, solopreneur problems here. It's always a it's that funny meme where you've got the dude that just like whips around in different wigs. And it's like when you're a small business owner and it's like HR and he turns around and he's got on like a mullet. And then it's like safety. He turns around and he's got on like a nice long hair piece. Then he turns around and he's got a crew cut and it's like marketing. Yeah. So if I say we, you know what I mean? I've just been working on that with myself. It's not a we, it's a me. Here I am. But I have been doing a bunch of stuff over on YouTube. I've been posting a bunch of those videos over on LinkedIn and Instagram. If you're looking for the deep cut, which is mostly memes and stuff like that, mostly reposted, recycled memes at that, things that make me giggle, and some behind the scenes stuff. I do some of those story things every now and again too. But I've been posting those videos kind of here, there, and everywhere. But YouTube, they're just better. I don't want to say better, but what's nice about YouTube is when I upload them in 4K, because I've been doing stuff in 4K, not to get all nerd on you here. At YouTube, you can at least watch them in 4K. When I put them on LinkedIn, I have to like crop them down to square because algorithm. I don't know. LinkedIn's weird. It doesn't seem to like kind of normal 4K stuff. It doesn't seem to like vertical stuff as much as like, you know, LinkedIn Reels or YouTube Shorts. But what I'm saying is I have to crop them down. And I have to cut some stuff out of frame, which doesn't necessarily ruin the experience. But when I watch them, my nerd brain goes, why is this so gritty? When I'm watching this on YouTube, it's beautiful. And I'm just guessing that LinkedIn probably just processes up to 1080 or something like that. So what I'm telling you is if you're liking the stuff that you're finding on LinkedIn, please like it, share it. I mean, comment on it. That helps so much. If you're looking for a super duper free way to support what I've got going on here, to quite literally help us keep the lights on doing videos and podcasts and things like that, sharing helps a ton. Liking, sharing, commenting, doing all the things that you can do to interact with the post, and telling your friends to do the same, helps an absolute ton to keep this little machine rolling. It most certainly does. But I'm putting all that stuff over on YouTube too. This is where I'm going. This is where I'm working my way towards. And we're pulling that into full-length shows. And I started doing a vlog. I challenged myself to do a 100-day vlog. That may or may not be your thing. I don't know. I don't think it's my thing, but I'm doing it. I wanted to do something that would get me shooting more video and learning more about how to shoot video. And I'm trying to be less fat on top of that. So I'm using that as a bit of an accountability tool and all that kind of sort of stuff, which I will gladly tell you here because I'm going to tell you over there. I've been doing good on a diet, and then I ate like three the cinema, but I'll keep wanting to say cinema roll. If you've got a daughter that's in an 8 to 10, 14-year-old range, you know what a cinema roll is. It's not a cinema roll. It is a cinnamon roll. I ate like three of those bad boys last night. So I kind of pooped the bed on the diet last night, but I'm right back on it this morning. But there's all kinds of cool stuff happening over there, so make sure you check out YouTube. Last but not least, I guess, before we jump into today's episode, if you need a hand on your hop journey, I do all kinds of stuff, from facilitating learning teams to teaching workshops to spending time doing keynotes, even if you just got that keynote, something that you want to do within your organization, and on and on and on and on and on. Send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. The calendar always getting weird. It's getting weirder as I move towards this spring, summer, fall. Looks like it's going to be stacked. And yeah, I got some stuff available. If you need a hand, though, let me know. TheHopNerd@gmail.com. Sooner than later, the sooner you let me know, the sooner we can make that date yours. I gripe about this all the time, and it's not at you. It's not at me. It's just the world. One of those things in the world where you're like, ah! One of those things where I get that phone call and you're pumped and I'm pumped and I'm like, this is going to be cool. And you're like, this is going to be cool. And I'm like, I know, I can't wait. And then you're like, oh, that's on the 5th, you say. I hate to tell you this. I got to go somewhere else. I got to be in Vermont. Yeah. Can we move it? Nope, sorry. I hate that. So the sooner you let me know, the sooner we can get those things set up on the calendar, and they're yours then. Yeah, that's absolutely yours. So, oh, last but not least, I always forget to tell you, there's all kinds of merch over in the merch store. Cold brew sip. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast with a couple dollars and you want a cool t-shirt out of the deal, go check out the merch store. It's just thehopnerd.com/shop. What else is there? Daryl the Safety Man has an album on Spotify. Go take a listen to that if you haven't. You can also just go find it at Daryl or safetydaryl.com. So merch, Daryl. There's books out there, 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less. All those different things, whether it's a like, share, or subscribe, picking up a t-shirt or Vive or a sticker or a hoodie, or going and listening to Daryl's playlist or sharing videos with your buddies and chuckling at them, laughing at me, making an idiot out of myself on camera, which I am known to do. That helps an absolute ton, more than you could ever imagine. So there we go. With all that said, let's jump into today's episode. Learning teams are near and dear to my heart. If you're listening here, you've probably been doing learning teams, or you've been thinking a lot about doing learning teams. But for many folks that tune in here, you may have never even heard of learning teams. We've had a big influx of new folks here on the podcast, and that's a huge positive thing. Folks are discovering more and more and more about human and organizational performance. And I just call it HOP, but you know what I mean by that. This approach of doing things a bit differently and humanizing our approaches and understanding that just because it's the way our little world in our organizations, just because it's the way it is right now, doesn't mean it has to stay that way. Like, we actually can make things better. It's cool. It's really cool to see a lot of people showing up and wanting to learn more about that stuff. I have been spending a lot of time at these like regional conferences and different things like that. I don't want to sound gripey here. And don't get me wrong, I love a good big safety conference, but they're not my most favorite thing in the world. I love coming and hanging out with people. I like the stuff that happens in the margins of the conference, not so much the conference, if that makes sense. A lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about. I like the, okay, when this session gets done, I can't wait. We'll go over there, we'll find a room, and we're all going to hang out and talk about this. Like, those are the things that I really like at conferences, like hanging out with you guys and grabbing coffee, and maybe in the evenings grabbing a nice conservatively poured glass of whiskey and a nice cigar, or just hanging out and chatting. Like, that's the cool stuff. But all that's to tell you that I've been doing a lot of these like smaller regional conferences here and there, and seems like everywhere. And what's cool about that for me is that when I ask people that question of who's heard about HOP, many people don't raise their hands. And so that's really neat to be fortunate enough to be in front of audiences where we get to share these ideas for the first time. That's such a blessing, right? That's such a gift, such an honor to get to stand in front of somebody and share with them something new. Because I remember years and years and years and years back sitting in that chair, having my mind blown about basically everything that I thought that I knew, that at that certain point in my career, I'd already grown to the point of going, okay, we're already doing things differently because where we've been has not been great. It worked for where we were at. I don't know that it was ever the bestest things. We were changing. And then have somebody go, and here's what it is, you know, having that conversation of just having your scalp peeled back, just like, yeah, that's cool to get to see that kind of click in people's minds as you're having that conversation, or see them storm out in anger and then only to DM you later on LinkedIn or somewhere and be like, hey, you know, after I thought about that, and I really put some thought into that over the past couple of months, thanks for sharing that with me. That really started this internal dialogue with myself of where we've been and where we want to go. I don't agree with you on everything. And that's cool. I don't want you to. The fact that we plant those seeds and you walk away curious and thinking, that's the goal. It's not to tell you what to think or what to do. It's to leave you curious and questioning and wanting to create change, improvement, innovation in our work worlds, to put a positive dent in them, to leave them a bit better than how we found them. That's the goal, because I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. Anyone out there telling you that they have all the answers or they know better than anybody else, their version of this is that much better than anyone else because of insert something here. They're not telling you something. You know this. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but they're not telling you something. They're selling you something. They're selling you the undercoat and the seat protectant. Yeah, they're selling you that stuff. We make this really nice thin plastic layer that we can put over your rims that when you run it against the curb in the drive-thru, it won't even scuff it. Okay. But with all that in mind, I wanted to talk about learning teams a little bit. And first off, I think I want to share with any of our noobs that are here, or even if you're not a noob, but you haven't really done this and you're looking for stuff to help you maybe start doing this. If you go to thehopnerd.com/resources, they're high level, but there's some quick overviews and guides and things like that to help kind of walk you through learning teams, right? There's stuff there. There's stuff there for you. So I don't really want to unpack learning teams with any great amount of depth. I don't want to use our time together for that because we've talked about that a whole bunch, and those resources are there. I really want to talk about maybe where learning teams fit in, and maybe we'll say, let's say this: learning teams, learn, soak, improve. Don't overcomplicate learning teams. If we're talking process, framework of learning teams, don't overcomplicate. I think we as people really like to add and add and add and add and add, because we think that the more that we add steps and sub-steps, and like the step one, and then step one A, step one B, step one C, step one C, and on and on and on and on and on, I think that we make it not as valuable. That's what I've always found valuable with learning teams, especially when doing them internal to organizations. When we first started on our journey and we were getting operational learning up and going early in our journey, it wasn't so procedural. It wasn't so you must ask these questions. It wasn't so your answers must fit in this neat box, because that's a problem. That's a real problem. If you try to take the chaos that is our world and is our work world, if you try to take all this complication and complexity, the world, I don't think I have to define the world to you. You live in it right here with me. And unless you are delusional, you know that it's wild out here, y'all. Yeah, it's wild. If you try to take all of that wackiness that is our human experience existing in this world and try to put that into a few boxes, you're always going to come up with the same answers. And the unfortunate part about that is those same answers are almost always, other than a broke clock being right twice a day. Yeah, that's the same. Other than maybe just getting lucky with it. You're mostly going to be wrong. Yeah, you're mostly just going to get those five answers. Yeah, they're limiting is what I'm saying. They're very linear. A lot of our traditional approaches are very linear, very, very limiting. You must fit your answers in this box because we're only asking these questions. No room to go up and out. No room to explore much deeper than what you find on the surface. And I think a lot of that with our other approaches is a bit of a structural problem. We're saying ask these steps, do exactly these steps, ask these exact questions, work your way through this in exactly this amount of days, do it exactly like this. And that's how you get this. Ask why and ask it five magical times. And if you ask it that fifth magical time, you have found your answer. And if you haven't, shame on you, you asked those whys wrong. It's wacky, right? So that's one of the things that I always really appreciated about learning teams. And I know that I do appreciate about learning teams. And I know that that's something that many of us appreciate about learning teams is the fact that they allow us to go where we need to go, to be curious and chase those golden threads instead of following a flowchart. I love it. Like it, love it. Got to have more of it. For my friends out there that are kind of new, I know I shared with you learn, soak, and improve and told you not to overcomplicate it. I will give you kind of those generic five steps right here, just because I think it is important if you are new here to understand that the basics of learning teams, just prepare, learn, soak, improve, and act. Yeah, prepare is exactly what it sounds like. Yep, duh. Get ready for it. Figure out who's going to be there, where you're going to do it at, all that stuff, who's bringing burritos. Learn is your first meeting and takes 60 to 90-ish minutes. I've heard a lot of people out there going, this should take like a day. I don't buy that. I think if it takes a day, you're probably just locking people in a room and punishing them for some reason. It doesn't take a day. It doesn't. Even if it's your first one, it doesn't take like a day. I will tell you, if it is your first time on a learning team, I discovered that you get more efficient with these over time. I would give myself a few hours just in case. Yeah, because it's going to be a bit clunky at first. Same thing with your second meeting. Give yourself a few hours. But I've heard some horror stories of people out there preaching the gospel that learn sessions should be like 14 days straight. And like people locked in rooms, like doing learning teams that last like a month. I've heard this. Try not to do that, I think. It seems like you're doing more of what we've always done and just calling it something different. That's actually just doing what you've always done. Yeah, but worse, because now you're calling it something different and now people look at you and go, oh, that's dumb. Yeah, don't do that. Soak is the next step in this basic process, and soak is this deliberate built-in point for reflection. Pro tip, we usually shoot for about a day, a little bit more, sure. I try not to go any less than that. I just don't. It seems like we need to sleep on it. There's a reason why we've kicked around that saying for years. Well, probably years, since the dawn of time. How about that? Improve is our second meeting, right? So learn, we're focusing on just that, learn mode. With improve, we'll usually start back in learn mode, recap anything that came from soak time, anything else we need to talk about, and then we'll move towards co-creating solutions or improvement strategies or things that can help make things a bit better. This is something that I want to throw in here. One of the things that I see holding us back with learning teams is that we walk into learning teams with a we're going to fix it mentality. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, we're people. When we see something that's broken, or we've had in our work worlds especially, when we've had an outcome that's not quite desirable. Maybe one of those things where we go, oh, Lord, God, this can never happen again. We walk in with, well, we're going to fix it. We're going to make sure this will never, ever happen again. I don't know that that's possible. I just don't. And I'm here to tell you, and I think you probably know this, we can't fix everything. Some things can't be fixed. Some things just can't be fixed. Let me say it one more time. Some things just can't be fixed. Drop the fix-it mentality at the door. Drop it there. If you can't scuttle it from the rest of your life, at least drop it at the door when you walk into that learning team, into that learning environment. And what I want you to replace it with is improve mode. Exactly. There's a reason why we don't call that meeting fix. It's improve. There's a lot of stuff that we can't fix. There's a lot of stuff we can improve. There's a lot of stuff that we can make a little bit better. There's a lot of things that we can just tweak and tune. There are things that we can improve, even if it's something that we can't improve that thing directly, but we can improve a bunch of stuff around it, and it kind of makes that thing a whole bunch better because all the stuff that we improved around it. Yep, that's the answer. Don't get hung up on this idea that you got to fix everything. Don't get hung up on this idea that you're going to be able to fix. Don't get hung up on this idea that you must improve everything. Don't get hung up on this idea of perfection. When I really think about the changes and the most meaningful changes that I have seen come out of learning teams, the most meaningful improvements, they've almost all been small micro improvements and adjustments. Rarely, if ever, are they this like big whopping, like, we solved the biggest problem ever. No. Yeah, every now and again, you're going to discover one of those things where it's like, that thing's been eating people for years. You would never listen, but now that you will, let me tell you about it. And yeah, you build guardrails around that big gaping something out there, that big gaping hole in your organization that could eat a Volkswagen Scirocco. Yeah, you'll do that every now and again. But those are things that we would commonly refer to as low-hanging fruit. Our organizations are usually already pretty good at those things. We're really good at the obvious stuff. We're really good at the things like, that thing eats people. That thing has a high probability of blowing up, because we know from industry OE, from operating experience, that it has blown up everywhere else that this thing has been. We're pretty decent at that stuff. Pat ourselves on the back. Yeah, we're good at that stuff. If something will kill or maim our employees, almost all organizations will do something about that and do something pretty drastic about it. I said most. I know somebody's going to argue. Yeah, I know most. I don't even want to say high performing, because that's kind of where my brain was going at first. But I think even like mediocre performing organizations, if that thing will cut people's arms off, you're going to try something to make it not cut people's arms off. We're good at that stuff. The stuff that we miss are those faint signal kind of things. The things that we miss are those pain point kind of things. The things that we miss are those frustration kind of things. Those things that stack up and build and fester and grow. And then eventually those failure in motion kind of things that then all of a sudden we have a massive blowout. But we miss all that other stuff because we're like, they make do with that. That's not really that big of a deal. It's not cutting people's arms off. That's where learning teams almost always take us. It takes us to the stuff that we can tweak and tune, micro improvements and adjustments, which leads us to step number 5, being act. That's just the improvement phase. That's where you actually bring things to life. That's where you come up with those formalized actions and you drive those actions in your organization. You go to tri-storming or solutioneering, right? You come up with some strategy, making up words, and you just go after it. That's where you actually drive those things, to bringing those changes to life in the real life, in your real world. So sorry for any of you that maybe that was a bit of a recap, but I feel that it's important to continue to share some of those stuff, some of those things. And maybe if it was a bit of a recap for you, at least around the learning team process, maybe there was a nugget or something or two in there that was new for you, or maybe just hit a little bit differently. But the other thing that I want to talk about here, there's a few things. Starting points. Pre-event is kind of obvious, duh. Yeah. Innovation points, where like we've done something really, really cool, or we've had interesting success. Those maybe not as obvious as events, but yeah, they're kind of like, of course, duh, we need to go investigate that success. We need to understand how we did something so badass there. How do we make that badassery sustainable? Yeah, how do we do that? Of course, we want to look at those things. But I think the place that we miss, that we almost always miss within our organizations, is pre-event operational learning. Now, when I say that, and I have these pre-event operational learning conversations a lot, I think we overcomplicate it once again. We think, but where's my purchase point? Where do I get a bite? Where do I start? The answer is you just start. I know. Well, that's easy for you to say, Sam. I know. But if you make time for it to happen, you have to actually make time for it to happen. You have to have those pre-things in place for it to occur. And what I mean by that is you can't will it into existence. You can't snap your fingers and say, everyone go magic now, pre-event operational learning. No, you've got to give people time to be able to do it. You've got to give them resources to be able to do it. Don't tell me that you're really, really hot and heavy and focused on doing pre-event operational learning, and then in the next breath tell me that, yeah, but we can't take people off the line to learn from them. Because then it tells me that you're not valuing pre-event operational learning. You're not all that interested in it. What you're interested in is running that line until that blowout, and then you'll deal with the incident report. Then you'll deal with post-event operational learning. Yeah, and your choice. Again, not here to tell you what to do, y'all. Just giving you my spin on it, my take. Don't tell me that you're pumped about going out and learning from normal work, and then tell me that you're already working people 12 hours a day, but you can't give somebody an hour to do a learning team. You can't give a facilitator an hour to do a learning team. You can't prepare some facilitators, give them a little bit of time. Even if it's not in a more formalized learning team setting, to just go out and be curious and explore your work world and listen, just to be an active listener in your organization. How are things going? What sucks about this job? what's the dumbest thing that we ask you to do every day or else? Can you tell me about something that frustrates you? Like, teach me about something about this task that's frustrating. Nothing? What about that task? Well, let me tell you, if you want those things to happen, the first step in that process isn't to say, damn it, go do it. The first step in that process is to say, I'm going to enable you for success to be able to go do that. Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. If we want to focus on pre-event operational learning, that's the first step. The next step is just do it. Yeah, we overcomplicate it here. We're like, but where? Well, if you want a but where, if what I shared with you just now around going out and just being listeners and asking interesting questions isn't enough, I talk about learning explorations a lot, which to me is kind of the wider net of a learning team. So when I think about going out and having those curious conversations, I'm thinking about it through the lens of this is a learning exploration. I know that there are things to learn here. I know that frustrations and pain points and problems exist. I know that they are here. And I might even know that they are in this subset of this work. I know that there are issues here. I'm going to go out into here, that subset of work, and ask those interesting questions. I'm going to spend time there. Not demanding answers, but learning. Not telling you, show me where all of this sucks, but teach me how to do this. I might throw in as tell me what sucks about it. But the lens I'm really looking at it through is teach me how to do this. Help me get in your shoes a little bit. Walk me through. Treat me like I'm the green newbie here. Teach me how to do this task. I'm really curious about learning how to do this task. This isn't a test. I have no clue how to do this. Teach me how we do this. That's the starting point. If you're looking for some other starting points, when you're hearing pain in your organization, you know that I'm hot and heavy on pain points. To me, pain points are they're gifts from heaven because they're these faint signals of failure in motion, failure that hasn't happened, but things that are happening. And even if it doesn't trace all the way out to some like massive blowout failure, I'm here to tell you that alleviating pain and making things easier within your organization, just generally alleviating migraines within your organization, is a pretty positive effort. Yeah, it helps a lot. People might actually smile. Hey, could you believe it? People at work smiling. How ridiculous is that? People actually alleviating frustrations and pain from their work. How terrible of an idea is that? It's a good effort, even if it doesn't trace out to, hey, we just saved $1 billion. Of course it's a great effort. Of course it's a great effort. Pain points are always a great starting point. Now, the other thing that I think that we miss here with pre-event operational learning is pre-existing organizational data. Now, when I say that, sometimes I throw up in my mouth a little bit because I know that not all of this is good. Don't get me wrong here. I'm going to say pre-existing organizational data, and then somebody from the back is going to be, yeah, but it sucks. It's all bad. You're just an idiot. I know that it's not all good. Some organizations have better than others in certain areas than others. Sure. I'm going to pick on one that I think gets a bad rap for a very good reason, because I think we do it not great a lot, and that's maybe those more generic old school observation programs that have been very parent-child and very behavior-based and very me leader, me smart, you worker, you dumb. That means me parent, you child, me got book, me tell you how to do job. Yeah, those things. And I always get in trouble with executives when I ask if the frontline employees can actually come up to the C-suite and do those same observations on them, but with an executive observation card, because their decisions have much greater far-flung and weighted outcomes than what the direct employees have. like, hey, they could cause a bad day for sure. Like, they could have a bad day, that's for sure. But you could like murder like 1,000 people in this company based off the decisions you make. But no, they can't do that. Of course they can. I'm great. Look at my fancy shoes and my impressive name badge. Of course they can. Yeah, they're parent child. That's the definition of parent child. You got power. They don't have power. You executive, you smart. Me smart executive. You worker, you dumb worker wrench puller. Yeah, how horrific is that? That just makes you want to go bleh, because you should go bleh, because that's stupid. That's the worst thing ever. That's the worst thing ever. The thing here is, and my intent is not to rant, the thing here is that they don't all suck. Yeah, I've seen many organizations do observations very well. They've broken down some of that parent-child stuff. The majority of it. The workers value it. The leaders value it. They've moved away from me, leader, me, smart. You, worker, you, dumb. They moved away from that. Yeah. They've moved away from the behavioral side of it. Yeah, that's really what they've done. Like, yeah, of course. Like, I'm an observer back here. That doesn't make a lick of sense to me. But I know it makes sense to you. So let's understand how this makes sense to do this. Let's understand why we got to do it that way. Because there's a reason. That's way better. That's like 100 times better. That might be 1,000 times better. That's a lot better. Yeah, a lot better. So in those situations, and you know right now in your gut, because I know you got an observation program, because like everybody has a freaking observation program. You know in your gut right now if it sucks or not. You know, I don't have to tell you if it sucks or not. We knew that ours sucked. Yeah, we knew. We gutted it and overhauled it and then burned it down and then redid it and then burned it down again and eventually got it to where it's like, okay, yeah, this is actually pretty stinking good. Everybody likes this thing. And it's spitting out some cool stuff. You know if it sucks. If it sucks, it's not a good starting point. But you also know in your gut if you think you're onto something, if you think it's working. Now, you can discover if that's actually good information by going out and spending time with the folks that actually have to use it. Yeah, of course. You can go out and spend some time with the folks and understand if it's actually working how you think it's working, and you should, whether you think it sucks or it doesn't suck. And I'm just using observations as an example of pre-existing data points because I know that you have them. And if you find out that it's pretty stinking good, or you find out it's not great, but you get it to where it's pretty stinking good, those are good data set. That's a good opportunity to go, hey, you know, like, we're having trouble with this. Everybody's clearly telling us that we're having trouble with this. That sounds like a great opportunity because nothing crazy bad has happened yet to do pre-event operational learning. Yeah, of course. You probably use all kinds of fancy stuff in your organization. And if you've been listening to me for more than a minute, you know that I'm going to tell you that I don't think necessarily, not all, really not many, if any, I don't think that the tools that we use in our organization, the cool little gadgets that we use in our organization, the observation cards that we use in our organization, the pre-jump briefs, the two-minute drill cards, I don't think any of that stuff is inherently good or inherently bad. Yeah, you got folks on both sides of that. They're going to say, it's always good because it's done in the name of safety, and anything done in the name of safety is always wonderful, and da-da-da-da-da, because safety poops rainbows, and that's anything, safety means more, and yeah, of course you're going to get that. You're also going to get the other side of that, where people go, anything is always terrible, and it's always awful, and it's always just evil. And that's not true either. I think it's probably, I don't even want to say it's in the middle. I think what I want to say is that the tool is pretty benign. It's based on the culture in which you immerse it into. It's based on your underlying beliefs and assumptions about safety and people and on and on and on and on and on within your organization. If you take like learning teams, which I think are a pretty phenomenal tool, and you dunk them into a work world that is full of blame, shame, and retrain, and people are idiots and leaders are smart and workers are dumb, and just this awfulness, just blah, awfulness, then guess what you're going to get with learning teams? They're going to be awfulness. They're going to suck. They're not only going to suck, they're going to do a lot of harm because you're just going to use them as opportunities to blame. Yeah. But there's so many of these things that when we get those underlying beliefs and assumptions better, I don't even want to say right, when we're doing better, when we're treating people how we want to be treated, when we're living up to treating our fellow humans well. Yeah, just the basics here, I think, is real basic. A lot of those tools tend to work, and the ones that don't work are very obvious, and the ones that do work well for us are very obvious. And yeah, so if you have that really, really good working environment, if people can tell you the truth, and that's a good test of a lot of this, is people can tell you the good, the bad, the ugly, and the scary. When people can bring you the scary truth, you're doing something right. You're doing pretty stinking good. When somebody says, oh, this is bad and this is not good, but I know that I can go tell the company about this, and I know that we're going to do something good with it, and I know I'm not going to get decapitated, and I know my leader's not going to piss their pants, and I know that's a huge positive indicator. When you've got that, when you've got that in your organization, when that's what's happening, you have a lot of data sets and tools that are available to you that you should leverage for pre-event operational learning. That's the caveat, though. You've got to have the good stuff. Like, everything's got to be working. You can't be the normal old thing where it's like PPE, barrier tape. That's what all of our systems are spitting out. And those stinking contracts, man, we got contractor problems. You can't just do that because that's not true. That's just people writing stuff down because they know they can't tell you anything else. They know if they tell you the real stuff that you're going to crap yourself. Yeah. So if you've got that stuff, you've got a lot of pre-existing data points, stuff that you've already collected that's there. Are things that you are collecting, hopefully in an efficient and non-time-consuming manner. And, I'm sorry. I just feel the need to insert a bunch of this stuff. And I will say that whatever those data collection devices are, make sure that you are creating with the people that you want to use them or they are not going to use them. Okay, I'm over it. I'm moving on. This is all to tell you, though, that you have those things there. Whether it's your vehicle monitoring system. I'm going to use this one as an example. That every company has. Yeah, we put them on everything from work trucks to bicycles. Anything that's got wheels, we're watching it. I don't think that's good or bad. I think it's how you use it. I think it's how you think about it. If you see that as like we got pesky speeders, and the way that we deal with speeders is that we beat people, instead of going out and learning that, hey, you know, you don't give me enough time to get back and forth between jobs, and I actually have six extra jobs, and I'm having to speed because on the other side of this is if I don't get these six extra jobs done, you're going to fire me. So I get fired for speeding or I get fired for not getting these jobs done. The only answer that you give me is fired. Yeah, so I'm going to pick the one that I know I can probably get away with, which is speeding. Yeah, I'm going to that one. Instead of doing that, you just beat people. It's not going to work. But if you see that's like, oh, wait a second, what's going on here? Like, nobody's wearing seatbelts. Why? Let's go learn from those folks. That's a great opportunity to learn pre-event operational learning. Those people probably have some really, really stinking good information you need to hear. Everyone's speeding. We've got some really, really, really good information that there's some stuff there we need to dig into. A lot of hard braking and swerving. Yeah. Other than there's probably something deeper to that than Phoenix traffic sucks. Yeah. Or it could sound like, why are we sending everybody out at rush hour? Can we adjust start times on some of these projects with those folks that would make more sense to them? We've done that. Yeah, we've done that a few times. Where people are like, listen. Start time at like 8. Why? It's dumb. I'm like, is it? I thought you guys want to sleep in. No, I'm up at 3. Okay, so what do you want to do? Let's start at 4 because I can be there before traffic and then we're done and I can get home before traffic. And guess what goes down? Speeding. Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of opportunities with pre-existing data collection mechanisms within your organization. Again, I don't think all those are good, but I definitely don't think all those are bad. I think it's how you use them. I think it's how you use those things. And there's a lot of tech and a lot of stuff that we're throwing into our work worlds that if we're using them with good intent, yeah, and we're looking at what they're spitting out with a curious mind, I'm going to go learn more about this. Not that's the answer. Those are great starting points for pre-event. Operational learning. Now, a couple other things I guess I just want to throw in here to wrap up because we've been going for a minute. A lot of what I'm sharing with you here is that learning teams can fit into your organization. It doesn't take a gut. Yeah, you don't have to like burn everything out. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, I guess, but I don't think I do know why. There's this either or mentality in our world, and I'm guilty of it. We're all guilty of it. I mean, we're people. Of course we're guilty of it. Where it's this or that. It can't be both. Yeah, it can't be both. It can't be more than one thing can be true at once. It can't ever be that. It's always got to be this or that. Yeah. Learning teams are a tool in your toolkit. I think they're a highly valuable and efficient tool in your toolkit. Are learning teams like the bee's knees and the best thing ever, and you never need to do anything else ever and ever think about anything else? No, of course not. Of course not. And I don't know. Again, I feel like anybody that ever told me that, I looked at them like they were ridiculous because that is ridiculous. Does that replace my safety post-event learning review procedure? That's a fancy way of saying accident investigation. Yeah. Does it just make that go away? I don't think so. You know, again, a good example of how this stuff plugs in. And I've seen this done multiple times. Sorry, I've got a little bit of allergies. And I've seen this play out again really, really recently, like within like the past like few weeks recently. For us internally, we just completely revamped that process. We did a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff, a lot of tactical stuff that you can do. We removed blame from our post-event, our accident investigation procedure. I'm just going to say accident investigation procedure. You know what I mean. We removed blame from that. Yeah. We removed that requirement to discipline an employee if we found a rule violation within the first like 14 minutes. Yeah, we removed that. Oh, scary. I know. Not scary. Blame doesn't have any need to be placed that close to learning. It just doesn't. And what we did is we prioritized learning in that procedure above all else. And what we discovered is that when we learned, when we really prioritized learning over blaming, and not only prioritized over blaming, but completely removed blame from the procedure, guess what we did? We learned. Yeah, because when we had blame built in there, and especially early on in that process, we'd blame first and learn later. And that doesn't work very good. What we really saw out of that is we saw that did disciplinary action go away? No. Like, we still had those things where, like, disciplinary action was probably well warranted, but we found that those occasions to be extremely rare, much rarer than what we ever thought that they were, like less than 0.5% kind of rare. The problem was, is before we were blaming first, because if you look for somebody messed up, you're going to find somebody messed up and you're going to blame because somebody messed up and you're going to tarnish your learning because somebody messed up. At the very least, you're not going to get where you need to go with learning because somebody messed up. You're blaming first, learning later. You're not really getting where you need to go. You're not developing that industrial empathy. You're not discovering how things made sense. So when we reprioritized that a bit, we could see how things made sense. And then we would discover that almost always, like, disciplinary action doesn't make any sense here. And when we compared and contrasted that with where we would have totally disciplined in almost 90% of the cases. I guess what I'm saying is we discovered that it was opposite-sies. It was flipsies. Yeah, it went the other way. Where we were disciplining 90% of the time and then learning, and this is not, again, it was way less than this. I'm just going to use 90-10 as just an example, y'all. We found that actually, it's 90% should be like 90% learning, 10% discipline. Like, you get where I'm going. There's no number here. Somebody's yelling at me saying, I'm making up this ratio. I'm not. I'm just giving you examples. We found that worked far better. And I saw this play out really well. I wanted to share this with you. And I've probably shared it with you before, because I've seen this play out more than a few times, where there's like this aha moment. And again, I'm just using accident investigation as one of these many places where things do fit together. Where spending time with the safety team, and they're like, we finally got it. I'm like, did you tell me more? Like, we figured out what our accident investigation process is. I'm like, okay, tell me about it. Well, we learned that our accident investigation process sometimes takes us where we need to go. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I told you that. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And when it does, that's cool. That's awesome. It is cool. It is awesome. But sometimes it doesn't quite get into that context that we need to understand. Sometimes it doesn't just quite take us where we need to go. It's like, really? Say more. That's where we've really been focusing on post-event operational learning teams. Yeah. So what's cool about that is our accident investigation, of course we're going to collect facts. Of course we're going to do that. We use that as our fact finding. It's just the ABCs of what happened. It's just 1 through 3. It's just the basic understanding. Sometimes during that process, our employees, we're not investigating, and we're working with them to understand, because half the time they don't know how it happened either. And what happens is sometimes we solve it right there. Now, when we do that, we're going to take that and we ask around, and we spend time testing some of those solutions. We don't just blindly run with it, as we just shouldn't. But sometimes it doesn't take us where we go, and that's where we're really focusing on our post-event operational learning. Those two processes actually aren't opposing. When built well, they work really great together, because it gives us all that information, that basic information that we need to do an effective learning team. We've already got all the basic understanding out of the way. We know step one, step two, step three. Now we need to go up and out. You got it. See how those things go together? They go together nicely. Another example, post-event. I know I'm kind of on the post-event train here. But we would do that at first with our root cause analysis. I don't think root cause analysis is the devil. I don't. There are some people in our community that's going to tell you it's the worst thing ever. I don't think it's the worst thing ever. I think it's a tool in our toolkit. Yeah. In my organization, we had root cause analysis. We had apparent cause analysis. We had 5 why. We had learning teams. We had post-event safety investigation, something, something, something or another. We had fishbone this and that and the other. We had all those different things. And we viewed those. We taught people a skill set of seeking to understand And here are many tools that are at your disposal. But you also have the option to kind of wing it, to get creative as a facilitator. Use the tool that works best for you in a particular situation based on the particular thing you're trying to learn more about. What's so wrong with that? Is there really one right way? I don't think so. We had that corporate mandate that said that we had to do RCAs with certain levels of events. You probably have one of those too. But what we discovered is sometimes those RCAs wouldn't quite take us where we wanted to go. So one of those outputs, one of those corrective actions would actually be an action to go learn more using a tool like a learning team. It works well. Yeah, this took us where we needed to go with this thing. We figured this thing out, and we've verified that. We've spent time with folks. We've tested it. We tri-stormed it. That thing's working. But this thing, we couldn't quite get where we needed to go, but we think there's more there. Action, we're going to facilitate a learning team. Yeah, these things play nice together. So what I'm sharing with you here with these last kind of bullet points, I guess, is to tell you that don't think of learning teams as the one and only. Don't think of learning teams as the thing that you're going to replace everything that you've ever done with. No, it's a tool in your little tool belt of operational learning and improvement. It's a very big one to me. I use it more than I use anything else because of what I shared at the beginning. I'm not boxed in. It lets me go where I need to go. It lets me learn from the people that I really need to learn from. It lets me start to understand some of how things make sense and where these pain points exist and these frustrations and these problems. Everything is on the table is what I'm saying. Everything is on the table. So I guess a bit of a recap before we wrap this thing up, since we're kind of rolling here towards the end of coming up on an hour, y'all. I've been going long lately. Maybe the next couple I'll try to shorten them up a little bit on you. But if you need learning teams resources, they're at thehopner.com/resources. Learn, soak, and improve. Don't overcomplicate the process. Post-event operational learning is important. Of course it is. And I don't think that our accident investigations take us where we need to go a lot of the times. And when you discover that you're kind of left going, I don't think I know where I need to go, that's a great opportunity to move towards post-event learning teams. With that said, I don't think you need to do a learning team for every single event that happens in your organization. I just don't. Not all events are created equally. They're just not. And a lot of your processes will take you where you need to go. Of course they will. The big, powerful thing here that most organizations miss is pre-event operational learning. If you want to start pre-event operational learning, focus on creating time and space for pre-event operational learning to occur. That is step number zero. That's just making it possible. That's just making it possible. And step number one is just go do it. Don't worry about, I don't know where to start. I don't know. Go do it. Ask more curious, interesting, operationally curious questions. We got some of those. If you're interested in them, startingpointcards.com. There's an app out there. We're working to make the app better and better and better and better. It's just the first wave version of the app. We're in process of version 2 and version 3 simultaneously as we speak to improve that app. But it's just cards appified. It's just cards on an app form. But go ask those questions. Ask interesting questions. People will tell you. They will tell you. If you show up to learn instead of to judge and blame, nitpick and audit, if you show up to learn, and they can tell. If you show up to learn, they're going to teach you something. Even if you don't know what in the hell you're looking for, they're going to teach you something. And you're going to walk away from that going, holy crap, I know where we can go do some deeper operational learning. Yeah, focus on pre-event operational learning. Listen for pain points, frustration points, the good, the bad, the ugly, the scary, interesting success. Just go out and be curious. Now, the other thing that we talked about was pre-existing organizational data points. With the caveat being is that these things actually have to be functional in your organization. You can't just take crappy old behavior-based safety observation data that everyone just pencil whips and then expect that to lead you in the direction of good starting points for operational learning, because all that stuff is the land of make-believe. There's things that I sit down and write at my desk, the things I know that I can get away with telling you, because I know you're not gonna fire half of us for talking about barrier tape and those stinking contractors messing everything up. Yeah, you're not gonna get onto us over that. So the caveat is it's gotta be good. That I don't know that any of these particular tools or things are good or evil. I don't think that. I think they're benign. what makes them used for the purposes of good or the purposes of evil within our organization is our underlying beliefs and such as how we think about people, how we think about this whole thing we know is work, how we approach this stuff. That's what determines that. And if a good test for that is that if people can really tell you the scary, ugly truth, if they can really tell you and they know they can tell you, that's a good test. That's a good indicator that you're getting it right. And some of those data points are probably going to be pretty stinking good. There's all kinds of stuff out there that you can use as starting points for deeper operational learning instead of ending points to assign blame, instead of ending points to say, aha, I'll figure it out in my office and make these people better. There are a lot of pre-existing data points within your organization that you can go be more curious about and actually come up with some cool improvement strategies around with the folks that have to use them. We mentioned vehicle monitoring data. We mentioned observations. We mentioned, did we mention other things? But there's a lot. There's a lot. And you know in your gut if that observation program is being used for good. You know in your gut if it's working pretty well. And even if you think you know in your gut, you should go ask the folks that have to use it if it's actually working pretty well. They'll usually tell you. So with all of that being said, I hope that you gained something out of today's episode, even if you've been doing learning teams for a while. Just some rambly thoughts that have been on my mind lately around operational learning. And if you're brand new to learning teams and human and organizational performance, again, thehotnerd.com, there's all kinds of resources over there and things that you can just download and go use. The biggest thing that I will leave you with here, I think I'm going to end where I started and add in a little bit more. How about that? There we go. Yeah, end where I started and add in a little bit more. What did I tell you that I really appreciate about learning teams in particular is that they're not boxed in. Work is messy. So our approaches to learning can't be like these clean, sterile things because work's not clean and sterile. Work's not ABC. Work is messy. So learning about work, about real work, about normal work, work is messy. So learning about work is going to be messy. Learning teams allows us to get messy, to get a little dirty. Now, the last thing that I'll leave you with is that if you haven't started doing learning teams, the best way to learn how to do learning teams is to go do learning teams. I'm giving you permission to fail. You're going to get it wrong. Of course you are. But trying and getting it wrong is how you learn how to get it right. But we're good at that as people. Sometimes we get things so wrong that we figure out how to get them right. Now, when I tell you that, I'm also going to tell you that when you have that next big event, that's probably not the place to learn. Pick something pre-event. Go out. Give it a shot. Play with it. Get it wrong. Yeah. But start. Start now. It's not as big and scary as you think it is. As soon as you get that first one under your belt, you get that second one under your belt, you're rocking and rolling then. And you just get better and better and better at being a facilitator. So if you need those resources, hopnerd.com/resources. If you need a hand on your hop journey, get in hold. That's what I was going to say. get in touch. There we go. Words will come out of my mouth one of these days without sounding like an absolute idiot. Send me an email at thehopnerd@gmail.com if you're looking for that hand, if you're looking for that next keynote speaker, if you're looking for that next workshop, if you want somebody to help you facilitate learning teams. I would love to be that person. The books are out there on Amazon. There's merch over on the website. Follow along, everyone. You follow along, all that kind of sort of stuff. Until next time, love you. Meet you. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.